to begin to filibuster John Brennan's nomination for the CIA. I will speak until I can no longer speak. I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast that our Constitution is important, that your rights to trial by jury are precious, that no American should be killed by a drone on American soil without first being charged with a crime. Without
first, we can split the difference on. But the issue we've had today, I think, is one that we don't split the difference on. I think you don't get half the Fifth Amendment. I don't think you acknowledge the president can obey the Fifth Amendment when he chooses. I don't think you acknowledge the Fifth Amendment due process can somehow occur behind closed doors. So while I'm a fan of Henry Clay, I've often said that I'm a fan of Cassius Clay. Cassius Clay's weapons of choice were said to be his pen and his Bowie knife. He was said to be so good with the first that he often had recourse to the latter. He was a fierce abolitionist. He didn't suffer fools, and he didn't compromise often. But what I would say is, it is worth fighting for what you believe in. I think the American people can tolerate a debate and a discussion. There's been nothing mean-spirited about this debate for 12 hours. I think, in fact, more of it would be even better. I wish we had more open and enjoined debate. The senior senator from Illinois has brought up good points, and I think that there is much discussion. I just hope that this won't be swept under the rug, and that this isn't the end of this, but that this is the beginning of this. And I would go for another 12 hours to try to break Strom Thurmond's record, but I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one.
Somewhere after midnight in my wildest fantasy, someone just beyond my reach, there's someone reaching back for me.
I rise today in opposition to Obamacare. I rise today in an effort to speak for 26 million Texans and for 300 million Americans. All across this country, Americans are suffering because of Obamacare. Obamacare isn't working. And yet, fundamentally, there are politicians in this body who are not listening to the people. They're not listening to the concerns of their constituents. They're not listening to the jobs lost, to the people forced into part-time work, to the people losing their health insurance, to the people who are struggling. A great many Texans, a great many Americans feel that they don't have a voice. And so I hope to play some very small part in helping provide that voice for them. Madam President, I intend to speak in opposition to Obamacare. I intend to speak in support of defunding Obamacare until I am no longer able to stand, to do everything that I can to help Americans stand together and recognize this grand experiment 3.5 years ago is quite simply
there is
not
a
working.
Problem in Washington, and the problem is bigger than a continuing resolution. It's bigger than Obamacare. It's even bigger than the budget. The most fundamental problem, the frustration, is that the men and women in Washington aren't listening. If you talk to the man and woman on the street, that's the message you hear over and over again. Why don't they listen to me? Why don't they hear what we have to say? They aren't listening to the millions of people, Democrats, Republicans, independents, libertarians across the spectrum who say our elected officials, they get to Washington and they stop listening to the people. We just had a six-week recess during August where a substantial percentage of members of Congress chose not to hold town halls during the 6 weeks we had to be back in our home states, not even to give the constituents a chance to say their views. Because it's very easy when those of us who are in elected office have been here for a long time to believe Washington knows better, to believe that all the solutions are found in Washington, D.C., and the rest of the country is better, as they say of small children, neither seen but not heard. We need millions of people to get an answer. Millions of people are asking for accountability, for responsibility, for truth from their elected officials, truth about how Obamacare is failing the men and women of America. It is time, Madam President, quite simply, to make D.C. listen.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have, and I think it's sad to watch.
Closes a century of a government-sanctioned private banking cabal having controlled America's money supply, and by extension, our general government. In the last 100 years, the U.S. dollar, also known as the Federal Reserve Note, has lost over 98% of its value. Where did it go? It is the longest, biggest wealth redistribution scheme in human history, an epic wealth transfer from the poor and middle class to the uber-wealthy. The long march is almost over, and the battle is joined. As the Keynesian left in both parties plunges us deeper and deeper in unending debt, they simultaneously grow the police state at home and the empire abroad. This path is unsustainable. Since the Fed, the income tax, and the 17th Amendment in 1913, we have literally experienced a century of madness, theft, tyranny, and war. G. Edward Griffin, in his stellar tome, The Creature from Jekyll Island, writes, "The secret meeting on Jekyll Island in Georgia at which the Federal Reserve was conceived, the birth of a banking cartel to protect its members from competition, the strategy of how to convince Congress and the public that this cartel was an agency of the United States government." The New Jersey railway station was bitterly cold that night. Flurries of the year's first snow swirled around streetlights. November wind rattled roof panels above the track and gave a long, mournful sound among the rafters. It was approaching 10 p.m., and the station was nearly empty, except for a few passengers scurrying to board the last southbound of the day. The rail equipment was typical for that year of 1910, mostly chair cars that converted into sleepers with cramped upper and lower berths. For those with limited funds, coach cars were coupled to the front. They would take the brunt of the engine's noise and smoke that somehow always managed to seep through unseen cracks. The dining car was placed between the section as a subtle barrier between the two classes of travelers. By today's standards, the environment was drab. Chairs and mattresses were hard, surfaces were metal or scarred wood, colors were dark green and gray. In their hurry to board the train and escape the chill of the wind, few passengers noticed the activity at the far end of the platform. At a gate seldom used at this hour of the night was a spectacular sight. Nudged against the end rail bumper was a long car that caused those few who saw it to stop and stare. Its gleaming black paint was accented with polished brass handrails, knobs, frames, and filigrees. The shades were drawn, but through the open door one could see mahogany paneling, velvet drapes, plush armchairs, and a well-stocked bar. Porters with white serving coats were busying themselves with routine chores, and there was the distinct aroma of expensive cigars. Other cars in the station bore numbers on each end to distinguish them from their dull brothers, but numbers were not needed for this beauty. On the center of each side was a small plaque bearing but a single word, Aldrich. The elite group of financiers were embarked on a 1,000-mile journey that led them to Atlanta, then to Savannah, and finally to the small town of Brunswick, Georgia. An island just off the coast of Brunswick had recently been purchased by J.P. Morgan and several of his business associates. And it was here that they came in the fall and winter to hunt ducks or deer and to escape the rigors of cold weather in the north. It was called Jekyll Island. Mr. Davison, who was one of the owners of Jekyll Island and who was well known to the local paper, told them that these were merely personal friends and that they had come for the simple amusement of duck hunting. Phil Robertson is not pleased. The purpose of this meeting on Jekyll Island was not to hunt ducks. Simply stated, it was to come to an agreement on the structure and operation of a banking cartel. The goal of the cartel, as is true with all of them, was to maximize profits by minimizing competition between members, to make it difficult for new competitors to enter the field, and to utilize the police power of government to enforce the cartel agreement. Specific terms, the purpose, and indeed the actual outcome of this meeting was to create the blueprint for the Federal Reserve System. Here were representatives of the world's leading banking consortia, Morgan, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Warburg, and Kuhn Loeb. They were often competitors, and there is little doubt that there was considerable distrust between them and skillful maneuvering for favored position in any agreement. But they were driven together by one overriding desire to fight their common enemy. The enemy was competition. On December 23, 1913, Congress abdicated its constitutional commandment to regulate, as in make standard, the coin of these United States, and the corruption of our republic has increased at accelerating rates for the past century. Happy 100th birthday, Federal Reserve. Now drop dead. Yet 100 years later, in 2013, revealed some conservative champions too. Although it looks like they've lost the recent battles, the outcome of the war is far from determined. In March of this year, we witnessed Stand with Rand, the filibuster of 2013, when the junior senator from Kentucky took the floor and defended our constitutional rights. This was followed up with a 21-hour epic speech by the junior senator from Texas, with an adept assist by the junior senator from Utah, who fulfilled his campaign promise to do everything he could to stop or at least delay the economy-crushing, jobs-killing Obamacare debacle 4 years in the making. Conservative champions from the traditional right and libertarian quarters of the movement revealed the lie of the rhino-controlled GOP, which stands in opposition not to the Democrats, but rather their own constituency. The lines are drawn for 2014. Will this be the year of the conservative grassroots movements, or the final nail in the coffin of the old republic? You have a choice. Work hard now to further liberty by having real conservatives and real libertarians take over the GOP and secure a conservative majority in Congress, or watch the statists in both parties push their agenda to their benefit and our demise. Now is the last chance to stop those who want to fundamentally transform our republic into an empire abroad and a police state at home. End the destruction of our economy by the Republican-Democrat duopoly and their masters at the Federal Reserve by standing with the real conservatives who are right to demand the repeal or at least the delay of the Obamacare debacle and an audit of the Federal Reserve, which has not been conducted in 100 years. This week begins a new year, a midterm elections year, a quantitative easing into infinity year, an end to private health care year, a dark year. But don't fret. Light shines brightest in the dark. To defeat the cultural Marxists, the statists, collectivists, oligarchs, useful idiots and their fellow travelers, especially the Democrat socialists, first you must crush the rhinos for liberty. Be the conservative light that ends the corruption. If you like your freedom, you can keep your freedom, but only if you fight for it. Put an end to the century of madness. You are live on Liberty's Thunder with Rex and Trog, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Ruby Rex Rod, broadcasting from the Imperial City.
I'm sorry, Ruby Rex. This is Trog, Luddite. And that's kind of a play on words. You know, that was an excellent start there. And it just, I was kind of sitting back, put my feet up on the desk, and I thought you were going to read me a book, but now I got to talk. This is probably one of the most important conversations we could have. I mean, I know that, you know, Duck Dynasty was a big deal, and people are still trying to figure out what the NSA is doing or not doing, and people are just now really getting a big taste of Obamacare. I think it's important that we discuss why our country is where it's at, and it is where it's at because of one thing, what happened in 1913. And I actually just wrote a comment a second ago or a minute ago as you were reading, and it's really important. I wonder how many people have even bothered to read The Creature from Jekyll Island. It is an important book. It's an important historical book. It's an important economic book. It's an important political book because it changed the fabric of our country dramatically. And it took a while before it it took effect pretty quick because we had the Great Depression, we had World War I, and, you know, we've had endless wars since that the Fed was created. But it took a while before it really, really, really embedded itself in every fabric of our society. And a lot of people don't understand, but, you know, the gold standard, which used to kind of hold our economics in check and give us kind of a stabilizing point, was abolished by a Republican by the name of Richard Nixon. And they got us all entangled in the Vietnam War, and that was crushing our economics, and people were concerned about the U.S. trade dollar. And what happened was they were asking for the gold back, you know, whether it be France or Germany or whoever. And Nixon freaked out, and the Fed, whoever was in control of the Fed at that time, whispered in his ear and said, hey, here's how you can stop that. And so he took us off the gold standard completely. And once that happened, I don't know if anybody's ever taken the time to study the economic charts, whether it be debt, whether it be inflation, you know, any of those dynamics. After they took us off the gold standard, it was like a rocket ship into outer space on all the factors. And we were talking about this earlier about, you know, how much money a person could survive on, you know, in the 70s. And I, you know, I always relate back to remembering when I was a child in the late 60s when my dad was an assistant professor at a college, you know, which means he had 3 months off every year, made $5,800 a year, and we lived pretty good. He made $5,800 a year. And people hear about inflation, and I think they kind of understand that it happens, but I don't think people really, really sat down and studied what this has done to our society, because there was a time, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, or they had, you know, grandparents or their parents, you know, where you could actually survive on a single income, and, you know, mom could work or not work if she wanted to. I know my mom had double master's degrees, and she chose not to work because she had children and she wanted to be there. Yeah, she had jobs here and there and throughout a period of time, but for the most part, she wanted to do what she did, even though she was highly educated. But can you imagine trying to do that in today's world, Rex? And this is the important, one of the most important conversations you can have, one of the most important things that you can study, because if you do not have economic freedom, you will never have personal freedom. And all these other discussions we have, which if I look at the group, we have like 26 individual threads, depending on, you know, whether it be the Middle East or, you know, the BRICS and the Russia-China thing, or, you know, the NSA or whatever we have topics on, which are, you know, hot topics of the nation, this is the most important one. And I'm glad we're covering it, because I think it's important that people understand that we have never printed this much money, or digitally printed this much money, ever in the history of any economic recovery. And if anybody has ever taken the time to go back in time and study the recessions that we've had throughout time, especially since the Fed was formed, this one is not over. And the only reason you think it's over is because the news tells you it's over and the stock market is, you know, booming and everybody's all excited and we don't see the real impact of inflation yet because the money, all the printed money hasn't really filtered down into the consumer base of the economy yet. And so we're all kind of sitting around going, well, yeah, they say it, we're doing pretty good and unemployment is low and of course half the country's on food stamps or disability or unemployment, but it's all doing better. And so we have a situation going into 2014, I think is massively important. And personally, from a political standpoint, I want to back people who are willing, like Rand, who are willing to say enough is enough is enough. We need to know what is going on with our monetary system, what these people are doing, and more importantly, we need to get control of it because it's never constitutionally, the Congress was never supposed to give up its ability to print or coin money, as you said. So this is a great conversation. I hope we, who knows where it'll go. Who knows where any of our shows go when we get started. Back to you.
It's unscripted live thunder, so it just goes. We have a general theme. I'm watching John Stossel with his 70s porn star mustache and deadhead Matt Kibbe talk about spreading liberty online or tweeting for liberty. And it just made me realize that that's the only way that this show is even heard. It is you who are listening right now. You're the only reason anybody knows this show exists. You share it, you post it, you tell people about it, and we appreciate it very much. It's been nearly 18 months we've been doing this, and sometimes I can't imagine that that's happened, but we appreciate it. So please go to – yeah, well, more or less. I think it was May 2012, that dark year of the Romney-Obama debacle. If you're on Facebook –
How much have we made?
Well, I can tell you what it costs. We've made zip, but I can tell you what it costs. We pour money into this. You're our only marketing arm. So on Facebook, please go to Liberty's Thunder, our show page. Like the page, and you will get notifications in your news feed when we are broadcasting, which is usually Sunday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. But every once in a while, we get a hair up our ass and do another show, like we've been trying to do part two of our Conservatism Defined show. And those will be at odd times, usually Thursday nights. But if you go to our page and like the page, that's where we will post that information. And also the group that Chris was talking about is Coalition of Freedom. So on Facebook, go to Coalition of Freedom and join there. Lots of in-depth conversations about many of the topics we discuss right here on Liberty's Thunder. If you're in Blog Talk Radio, if you go below the show graphics, you can hit the download button. Right-click on that, you get an MP3. You can play that in your MP3-enabled device. You can burn a CD. You can email it to people. But get it out there. And just remember that just because you shared it doesn't mean you endorse it or Chris or me or anything we say, but you're simply telling people, take a little different perspective because the news is managing your mind. Both the so-called right-wing news and the left-wing news, they're simply trying to get you to behave in a way that is under their control and prevents you from actually thinking. Don't be a repeater. Don't be a parrot. Think through things. And what we try to do here is put things in perspective for you and show you what a real conservative, which is two-thirds libertarian, as in classical liberal, perspective on things is. Because just because it's Republican or just because someone claims to be Tea Party or claims to be conservative or claims to like Ron Paul doesn't mean that they really do. And you've got to think for yourself. And what we have learned in this past year is that on the 100th birthday of the Federal Reserve, we are seeing its tentacles in everything. We almost bombed the crap out of Syria. We got an incompetent Speaker of the House with a rotten liver reelected. We got an incompetent RNC chairman with a red ball gag in his mouth reelected. We had Obamacare just explode all over the place and mess things up. You've got the NSA spying on every single American in violation of the Constitution, downloading your metadata and keeping an eye on everything that you've got. And Edward Snowden has been revealing more and more tidbits, which you're not hearing about in our media here, about how they have cables and microwave towers and all sorts of gizmos and tools to get at everything that you're doing. They know where you are. They know what you're saying. They haven't done anything with that information yet, but you just wait. The police state will come clamping down on anybody who doesn't fall in line. If liberty is important to you, then you have to fight for it. And 2014 is the most pivotal year yet, because these midterm elections are going to decide if Imperial President Obama gets to do whatever the hell he wants to do for the next 2 years, or if Congress will actually do its job and check the executive. And that is entirely up to you. And that's what we're talking about today. The Federal Reserve controls the money supply, which funds the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical healthcare complex, the war machine abroad, and the police state, including the NSA at home. Where do you think they got all the money for that million-square-foot Utah data center? This is the stuff that's going on to control your behavior, because these people, these uber-wealthy people, are so mired in corruption. They are so living in fear. And what they fear the most, other than meeting God face-to-face, is you, because there's more of us than there is of them. And their fear makes them want to control you because they're afraid of you. And that's what this is about. Right, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I was actually looking for my chart of percentages of voter turnout. I'll find it as we're talking. But, you know, you bring up that word fear, because it really does, spin off to that. If you look at historically, if you look at what our founding fathers put together and what this country was, or these individual state countries, and when they kicked the British off the island or back to the island and they formed this constitution, the whole concept was maximizing freedom, individual liberty, your right to pick your destiny, whether you wanted to be a fur trapping mountain man or you wanted to own a factory or invent something or whatever the case may be. But you could prosper and you could pursue your dreams and you could have a voice and you could meet in the town square and have dissenting opinions. All those factors were in their mind. And it was, for lack of a better term, it was an experiment, because we hadn't seen that type of individual liberty in the history of the world. You know, the Greeks kind of started this concept of a citizen government, and, they quickly went oligarch and failed and disappeared, and the Roman Empire lifted. But it is an amazing thing when you really study history and you get your mind out of, the mess of what's going on in the world today, and you really go back and you look at what was the – there's actually a great book by David Barton called The Original Intent, which is a great piece of work. In fact, Wall Builders has a lot of great work, good things to read and study. Because if you don't understand what the intent was and what the Founding Fathers were attempting to put together and their economic system, and if you don't understand that, you won't understand what you've lost. Because, the Bill of Rights and, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the Second Amendment, your right to bear arms and protect yourself, all these factors have been under assault for a long time, and definitely the last 5 years like we've never seen. And the question is, and this thing about Edward Snowden, regardless of what you think about the situation individually, none of it is getting reported on in the United States. It is mind-boggling to think how controlled the media is. It is not a freedom of press, which is a very important part of our country. They are just lock, stock, whatever comes down to them. Here's what you're going to talk about. Here's what I want you to bury. Here's how I want you to talk about this. Here's a position we're going to take, and we're going to get the public to think this way and act that way and vote this way. I mean, it is all marketing, and it's been they've been at this machine for a long time, and they pretty much have it figured out. I think the something that's always frustrated me about human nature, because I mean, you know, sociology, marketing, that kind of thing, that's my background. But when you look at people and they all think they're all individuals and then they all wear the same shirt and get the same tattoo and the same earring, you're not being an individual. You are basically being a sheep, you know, and
customized into conformity.
Yeah,
customized into conformity. Yeah.
You know, and I've always felt I was like probably one of the last of the true individuals, just outside the realm on almost everything. And so it's always been humorous to me to watch society be sold a bill of goods, whether it's this, you know, what kind of clothes you're going to wear, hairstyles you're going to have, glasses you're going to put on your face, the car you're going to drive, the type of house, you know, whether it's that dynamics or it's political or it's how you don't invest money and how you waste money and go in debt. You know, it's all social trends and it's all controlled by marketing. And so,
yep.
You know, politics today is not a debate. It's a marketing game. And that's the thing that you have to break free of. You have to step back and look forward and say, what do I believe in? You know, what is my understanding of what America is supposed to be? You know, what do I want my future to look like? And even more so, what in the hell is this country going to be like for our children and our children's children? Because that's the question you have to ask yourself. And here's an important little thought before I roll back to you, is you don't think it can happen here, the things that you've seen in other countries and some of the terrible things we've seen, whether it was communist Russia or, you know, Stalin or any of those guys, or China or Nazi Germany or Mussolini's, you know, fascism in Italy. You don't think that's possible. You don't understand history.
Yep.
That's just my input.
Yeah, and if you don't know where you came from or where humanity came from, then you don't know where you're going. The interesting
right.
thing about the media, and you shared with me earlier, Chris, that Conan O'Brien clip where they were, you know, it's okay if you call yourself one or two or ten presidents, and that same exact line was touted by all of the local news all over the country, like they were fed this is the meme for the day. And it's amazing to realize that Madison Avenue marketing, whether it's paper, print, movies, whatever, was all based on the studies of Edward Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew, and it is not anything other than mass psychology. They are trying to manage your perception, and the thing is that it happens so frequently and at such a subliminal rate that sometimes you fall prey to it. So you've got to actually take a break and get away from that stuff and think things through and look at what's really going on and don't be distracted by things. Now, it looks like, you know, everything's going to hell, so it's easy to just, you know, run for your lives, the sky is falling. But the simple fact is that be a realist. You know, the situation does suck, but there is something that you can do about it. Now, what are your chances of success? I don't know. But, you know, you don't get up to, as Pete Rose said, you don't get up to bat unless you expect to hit a home run. Now, you're not going to hit a home run every time, but that's what you get up there to do. And what you have to do is fight and focus. And what we saw this year, with all the crap that's going on, with Reid nuking the Senate, all that stuff, it's because they're facing resistance, and they have to take these measures because they're afraid of the resistance. That resistance really reared its champion head in March of this year, when Rand Paul took to the floor of the Senate in a 13-hour filibuster. Now, what was that all about? It was ostensibly about domestic drone policy, but really it was about your individual rights to liberty and whether the Constitution actually guarantees your rights and whether the Bill of Rights is seriously checking what the government can and cannot do. Now, the Constitution is just a piece of paper unless you, the sovereign citizen, enforces it, and it is up to you. Now, you don't rely on someone like Rand Paul or someone like Ted Cruz to do all the heavy lifting. These are your elected representatives. These are great guys. You don't hero worship them. You're not a fan of them. They are elected to do a job, but you champion them when they do it. You support them when they do it, and you help them, because without you, they can't do much. But Rand Paul took to that floor, And Stand with Rand was trending on Twitter. And he was standing up to defend your right of individual liberty. And right now, Rand Paul has a bill, Senate Bill 209. It's called Audit the Fed, but really it's the Federal Reserve Transparency Act of 2013. 100 years ago, this month, they created this monster, and it is now destroying every aspect of your life. People don't even know how much it is involved in your life. It's invisible, and that's what makes it dangerous. But you have to do something about it. Are you aware of Audit the Fed? Have you checked out the Campaign for Liberty site on it? Have you been to Senator Rand Paul's site about it? Have you signed the petition? All this information, by the way, is on our page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook, and in our group, Militia of Liberty's Thunder. You need to take action. Call the House. Call the Senate. There is a bill in the House as well, H.R. 33, that is pretty much worded exactly the way Congressman Ron Paul had it written when he was congressman. And get other people to do it. There's only so much you can do. You've got your life. You've got everything that's going on. What you have to do is focus on three things. What did I do today to further the cause of liberty, to advance conservatism? Did I make a phone call? Did I get someone else to do it, creating a force multiplier? What was the issue I focused on? I mean, the Phil Robertson thing was important because it shows the culture war that's going on in this country and the lengths to which the left will go to quell authentic American conservatives and religious people. Okay, and that it is important in that regard. But it is not the most important thing, because while we were debating the Duck Commander and his million-dollar contract with A&E, we had the most draconian NDAA passed with indefinite detention provisions. We had Janet Yellen made Fed chairwoman, and most of us weren't paying attention to these things. This is how they do it. They distract you with something that might be vital and important and correct, but then they get worse things done when you're not looking. You have to pay attention. So work on Audit the Fed, because until we expose this monster for what it is and more people are aware of it, there will be no will to stop it. And if we don't stop the Fed soon, it will end us. That's an economic certainty. So make sure that you do that. And, Chris, unless you got something you want to throw in there, I'd like to play a little bit of Rand Paul's filibuster, because I think that was one of the high points of 2013.
Excuse me. I think that, another point that people need to do some research on is really, first of all, everybody should read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, number one. Number two, you need to understand the most basic primary thing to understand about the Fed. It is not a federal agency, and there is no reserves. And that's one of the most important things that you need to understand. I mean, I don't think people understand this stuff, and I think more people do than ever in the history of this country. And you can thank Dr. Ron Paul for that, because that's been one of his cornerstones of his political life was economic policy. And it's important to understand this, because this group is out of control. And that Stossel video, in which we probably are not going to play, but, they were talking about, they had Bernanke on there being asked all these questions about, are you printing money? No. Is this housing bubble going to burst? No. I mean, when you hear this and you think these are the people that are controlling our current economic, I don't even want to call it a policy, but, this desperation that they're doing to try to keep America from, dipping down again. This is important stuff to learn. I'm not logged into the chat, but that Stossel vid was a really good short interview with several people who understand, what's going on. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Go ahead, do your vid. I mean, your clip.
Yeah. I think that's a very important point, and you're right. Dr. Paul has been the one to bring it to prominence. And I got turned on to Dr. Paul a long time ago through the Mises Institute. When I was a teenager, I read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. And, of course, when you're 15, that just sounds awesome. When you read it again when you're 30 or 40, you go, man, that is like a comic book. I mean, she's not a very good writer. But nevertheless, it got me interested in looking things up. I came across Murray Rothbard and then the Mises Institute, and that's where I first came across Dr. Paul's writings. But it is very vitally important that everybody understand this, and it's not that complicated. What you simply have to understand is that this is a group of bankers who don't want to compete with the market, so they use the government to secure their position, and now they have control over the money supply. They keep creating more and more money, which sounds like a good idea. There's more money. But every time they create more money, each unit of money is worth less. So they effectively rob you of your wealth invisibly without you even noticing it. And that's why this has to be exposed. The other thing is that, of course, as they're robbing you, they
taxation.
Have to get concerned that one day, yeah, you might figure out that they're robbing you, and you might get a little pissed. Well, if you've got guns and you've got freedom of movement and you've got rights of due process, you might be able to do something about it. So they got to take those things away from you. And that's why Senator Rand Paul took to the floor of the Senate on March 6th of this year to defend your rights to liberty. It wasn't just about drones. Don't drone me, bro. That was kind of the joke. But he made some valid points. We can't play the whole thing. It's 13 hours long. You should check it out. It's available on C-SPAN if you didn't get to see it. Lots of really good information about liberty, conservatism, and constitutionalism in there. This is an 8-minute clip. We usually don't play clips that long, but this is a little bit of Rand Paul's filibuster just to show us that as bad as 2013 was, there are some shining stars, and they need an army of liberty-loving, proud Americans to support them so that we can make 2014 count. Here's the junior senator from Kentucky.
I voted for the first three nominees by the president. This is not about partisanship. I have allowed the president to pick his political appointees, but I will not sit quietly and let him shred the Constitution. I cannot sit at my desk quietly and let the president say that he will kill Americans on American soil who are not actively attacking
his country. John Brennan's nomination for the CIA. I will speak until I can no longer speak. I will speak as long as it takes until the alarm is sounded from coast to coast that our Constitution is important. No American should be killed by a drone on American soil without first being charged with a crime, without first being found to be guilty by a court.
Because when the president responds that I haven't killed any Americans yet at home and that I don't intend to do so, but I might, it's incredibly alarming and really goes against his oath of office. We have drones that are less than an ounce. Presumably with cameras, I don't know, it's hard for me to believe that, but less than an ounce with a camera. It is not impossible to conceive that you could have a drone fly outside your window and see what you're reading, and see what your reading material is. The targeted assassination program that started under Bush and was expanded under Obama essentially grants the executive the power to kill any U.S. citizen deemed to be a threat. I have a message here from, not from the White House, a message saying the White House hasn't returned our phone calls. If anybody knows anybody at the White House and wants to call them, we are looking for an answer from the White House. We've called Justice also. I think the answer says something about the sequester. Maybe they're gonna call me when the sequester is over. And I would go for another 12 hours to try to break Strom Thurmond's record, but I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one of those in a few minutes here. But I thank you very much for the forbearance, and I yield the floor.
Mr. President,
Senator exactly from Illinois,
why the Bill of Rights and why due process and justice is so important? Because there have been times when we get the wrong guy. Think. Think of after the Olympic bombing. You remember the Olympic bombing? They had this young man. They said, oh, he did it. In the old days, maybe they would have lynched him. Turns out he didn't do it. It separates us from them. The whole filibuster was not about drones so much as it was about the Bill of Rights. That when you're accused of a crime, you get a trial. This is who we are. This is what we're about as a country. It sets America apart. It's what separates us from them. This guy I have no sympathy for. A guy who wants to kill women and children is not going to advance any kind of religious cause. He's not going to advance any kind of political cause. I want to see this bomber punished. But I also want to see it done our way. have him stand trial with a lawyer, with a jury. We'll convict him for all the world to see, and we will punish him.
Times. We did not discuss how one stands and stays awake and lives as a normal human being for 13 hours in the, on the well.
And that wasn't even the record. Strom Thurmond did it more than 24 hours.
I don't know how Strom Thurmond did that, because, you know, they have to stay standing and they can't leave for the normal things that we would all want to take a break for.
Yeah.
But in terms of the essence of what he did he succeed in preventing John Brennan from becoming the head of the CIA? Probably not. There's enough votes to confirm him, and that vote will be today, tomorrow, or Saturday. But I don't think that was his real goal, John. John, I think his goal was to open up the eyes of the American public to the attitude of the White House, which seems to be, we can kill whoever we want, how we want, without revealing it to the public, without even revealing it to Congress, and we're not even going to answer Senator Paul's letter about how we got here historically, legally, and constitutionally. Because the Constitution couldn't be clearer. If the government wants life, liberty, or property, it must take it through due process. Due process can mean a declared war against an enemy combatant, but it cannot mean killing a guy, an American or not, sitting in a cafe having lunch with his 16-year-old son.
We use the drone program, obviously, in places like Afghanistan. We've taken out a number of terrorists in there and in North Africa as well. Is it such a slippery slope to imagine, you know, drones at some future point being used on the streets of, I don't know, New York City?
Well, I think it is for a couple of reasons. When this question was put to the Air Force about 6 months ago, the Air Force responded by saying, we expect to have applications for 30,000 drones in the U.S. in the next 10 years. The vast majority will be owned by state and local police. Will they be used just for surveillance, or will they be used offensively? And more interestingly, John, when Bob Mueller, the director of the FBI, was asked if drones can be used to kill people, he said, ask the White House. When John Brennan, the soon-to-be director of the CIA, was asked the same question, he said, ask the White House. When the Attorney General was asked that question, he hemmed and hawed and went back and forth with the great Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, and eventually, after much hemming and hawing, said no. But it's very, very dangerous that this is not a clear and crystal and pristine and immediate no. Of course not. With this isn't Stalin Russia. And we don't do this.
And he said, you know, I thought I made that clear after a lot of hemming and hawing.
He didn't make it clear. Senator Paul has made it clear to the public that the White House is contemplating these type of murders, and the White House and anybody in the government who thinks they can do this needs to be restrained and needs an eye-opener. Yesterday they got it. But should he have to suffer his body and soul through 13 hours of standing and, let's face it, not going to the bathroom in order to open up the country's eyes? That's the situation we're in today.
The brave new world, not that far away.
No, not that far away at all. When Aldous Huxley, author of Brave New World, and Orwell wrote,
you know, there's
these
a lot
things,
of things that we believe in that we shouldn't give up on. And actually, some of the things I was talking about, I think, attract people from both the left and the right. And that's supporting your right to trial by jury, your right to be innocent until proven guilty. These are such time-honored concepts that I think it allows our party to get bigger, but our young people want us to stand for something. They want us to really stand on principle, and I think that's why the filibuster probably helped me to gain enough votes to win in the poll.
Do you identify yourself as more a libertarian conservative? If people ask me, I'm a registered conservative in New York. I consider myself a Reagan conservative. How do you, is libertarian fair, or do you embrace it?
What? It depends on what people mean by it. I use the term constitutional conservative, but I also use the term libertarian conservative. One reason why I think conservative has to be modified is that when we were in power as Republicans, we said we were conservative, but we doubled the debt also. We added new Medicare prescription drug programs. We added on new programs and new debt. So really, the conservative term really maybe has to be specified more, either libertarian conservative or constitutional conservative, but I accept all of those terms if they mean that it believes in limited government and more individual liberty.
What they're trying to do is paint Rand as some kind of nut job. You know, ooh, he's a libertarian, pot-smoking sodomite. He's kooky, he's an isolationist. That's what they're trying to do, and it's because they've perverted the language. We've done several shows about perversion of language, and by the way, all of our shows, the old Tex and Rex shows and all the new Liberty Thunder shows, are available on our Blog Talk Radio page. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, search out Liberty's Thunder, and all the shows are there linked. You can play them right in your browser or the browser of your mobile device, or if you go below the scrolling graphics, you can download an MP3, play it in your MP3-enabled device. And we've done one show so far. It's probably going to be a 10-part series. Who knows when we'll get to it again. Conservatism, American conservatism defined, where we talk about what it really is. Because when you go back through history and you look at what conservative principles are and what conservative Republicans have said and done, Rand Paul is right there. What's happened in the last century is we've moved the political conversation so far to the left that anybody who's where the right was 100 years ago seems like a far-right extremist. Well, remember, with the political spectrum, the far left is total government, and the far right is total anarchy. And where we're supposed to be is slightly to the left of total anarchy. That's where we're supposed to be. That's where Rand Paul is. That's where Ted Cruz is. That's where Justin Amash is. That's where most Americans are. Don't be afraid of the words. Just because the Republicans are assholes doesn't mean we can't claim the word conservative. When a guy like Mitt Romney can claim to be severely conservative, the word is almost meaningless. Don't let them take it over. We're the conservatives because we seek to conserve the principles enshrined in liberal documents, the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. Wasn't his filibuster fantastic, Chris?
Yeah, and I, you just said a word that needs to be worked on, that liberal, when you talk about liberal documents, that's another word that's been, stolen, the left in this concept of liberal. If you want to talk about liberal or classical liberalism, you are talking about our founding fathers, you know, maximizing personal liberty, personal responsibility, a moral and ethical society. That was liberal. So that's another word that's been stolen. And yes, his filibuster, I actually, I think you watched the whole thing. I watched most of it. I watched most of Ted Cruz's. I'm a little older than you, so I got to go to bed at night. But I think that some, you know, it's real easy to get lost in all the crap. I mean, it was pretty amazing, you know, running a group and focusing on key, whether it's economy or, you know, specific things that are going on in our country, and running a group around that is a fair amount of work. But when scandal after scandal after scandal broke, whether it was the IRS or the NSA or whatever the case may be, it really lit up there for a while. And now we've some of the most important things have been buried and are no longer talked about, like the NSA. I watched a piece today on who was that, Wallace, Chris Wallace. He had a couple neocons on there, you know, that were doing the canned, how do we beat back the truth responses to what Snowden said at Christmas time. When he was talking about why he did what he did and how important liberty and freedom is. And listening to these guys, I was just disgusted, you know, that number one, that they were so-called Republicans and, you know, supposed to be the party of smaller government and fiscal responsibility and maximize freedom up there, you know, given the canned responses, you know, that, oh, the NSA does good things, we don't want to, you know, and he hurt our spy apparatus and all this crap, you know, because that's one of the, you know, he said, oh, yeah, we put our troops at, one of the guys said, oh, yeah, we put our troops at risk. And, you know, and that's one of the things that Snowden was very careful not to do, was reveal anything that was specific to, you know, people on the ground or troops on the ground or anything like that. His goal was to expose what many of us already knew was going on and what Rand Paul did his filibuster about, and that is an obtrusive government that is sticking its nose and its fingers and its control in every aspect of our lives. And I think most people already understand that. When you go down and you got to buy a $10 light bulb, you know, because some idiots decided they were going to, you know, had been co-opted by GE, you know, lobbyists, and they passed this stupid light bulb thing, and all of a sudden now you got to buy this light bulb, and you can't buy these light bulbs, and you got to buy toilets that won't flush and clog all the time, and, You have to have water meters that catch your water back, so you end up having to run more water anyway, you know, to get the same thing job done. I mean, just the insanity of the government in our lives. And
Chris,
that's
real quick, I don't want you to lose your train of thought, but I just wanted to say that that whole light bulb thing, that's actually one we can say is George Bush's fault. That one is actually true. It's George Bush's fault.
That was a Republican bill. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, you know, these things that we expose, and I know a lot of people, you know, they might get a little bit upset with us because we beat up on Republicans all the time or rhinos. And, yeah, that's what we do because I already know what a Democrat is. I already know that from my position that any chance you can, you need to replace them with a better candidate. I already know their socialist commie agenda. You know, so why do I need to spend all my time worrying about them? I know who they are and what they're going to do and the bills they pass and why they do the things they do. I mean, they're socialists or communists or Marxists, depending on which one you're talking about. So why would I spend my time worrying about them? I'm worried about our side of the fence. You know, who are the people who are supposed to be representing us? You know, whether it be back to the Republican platform, you know, smaller government, no new taxes. Hello. We just Republicans just voted twice in the same frickin' year to raise taxes. One was a tax increase a few months ago, and the other one was, you know, Rhino Ryan's budget deal with Patty Murray. And I apologize, everybody, that my state keeps putting that kindergarten teacher back in the Senate. It just blows me away. But it's hard to control King County. It's the highest percentage of population, and 90% of them are Californians. But back to what I was saying was that, what was I saying? That's a good question. Anyway.
You were talking about Rand Paul's filibuster.
but the whole concept of, you know, of classical liberalism, of what Rand Paul was talking about, we are at a point since 9/11 and the Patriot Act where government intrusion into our lives is beyond pale. And the question is are we as a people, number one, and two, are our elected officials going to stand up for the Constitution and maximize freedom? And I'm not talking about giving up our security, because 90% of this crap has nothing to do, you know, spying on you and me and listening to our phone calls or logging our information and not listening unless they feel like it, is not have anything to do with terrorism. It doesn't have anything to do with keeping our country safe. It has to do with totalitarianism. And that is what Snowden, that's what Rand Paul was talking about in his filibuster, and that was what Snowden's point was people need to wake the hell up. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we never will. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if people are so far gone and so with their heads stuck in reality TV and American Idol and Dancing with the Stars and whatever else they do with their lives, and just holding on in fear, hiding in their big super churches, you know, where it's all safe and warm and fuzzy, and just hoping that somebody else will fix it. I don't know what's happened to people. You know, politicians have always been a-holes, in my opinion. I've never liked them. I've never liked politicians, Rex. I've known a lot of them through my life, living in Alaska, in the capital city of 30,000 people, you know, a small population. You know, you lived around them. You knew them. And I dealt with those people for 21 years, and I was never impressed, you know. And we used to have our legislative session every year, and I used to jokingly call it, everybody's coming to town to beg for money. You know, everybody's got to get their money for their program. And basically just creating jobs so that they can, you know, play with other people, the money that the government steals from the people and do their program, you know, which has never been a part of my life. I've never been a part of it, but I've sure been around it, was never impressed. So politicians are what they are. And when you have a midterm election, which is actually in some ways more important than the national main election for the president, who's only one man, you know, we've got all House seats up for reelection and 33 or 35 Senate seats, depending on on, you know, there's some special elections in there and things like that. But, you know, that's a lot of people. And we have never in the history of this country had so many people get reelected over and over and over and over again, and such a small percentage of people get out the vote. You know, you're dealing with about 35% of the people who can get off their frickin' lazy butts and go down and pull a lever for a candidate. It just blows me away. You want freedom, then get involved. And not just you. How many people do you take with you? How many people do you sit down and say, hey, this is an important election, and we need to stand behind these people that are fighting for our Constitution and our freedom and sane monetary policy? And if you don't do that, then what the hell are you even on Facebook for?
Yeah, or Twitter or breathing. Look, are people going to wake up before it gets really ugly? Most of them won't. Until they really feel the pain, most won't. But some are. If you're listening to this show, you're grassroots, you're involved. Your mission for 2014 is to create a force multiplier. You have to get other people involved. I don't like politicians, including Senators Paul and Senators Cruz. Now, when I say I don't like them, I don't know the guys personally, okay? I like what they're doing. But I just don't like politicians in general because they're all kind of shifty, and it's somewhat of an occupational hazard because they're playing behind enemy lines in dirty politics, so they kind of have to do certain things. But here's the simple fact. Whether you like politics or not, whether you like the news or you don't, you can't opt out. Life is not a spectator sport. Yeah, life is not a spectator sport, and in this country, what it still is, even though it's falling apart, it's citizen government. That means that you not only have the right to liberty, you have the duty to defend liberty. There is no opting out. Politics is a full contact sport, and it requires full participation. So when someone tells you, I'm really not that into politics, I'd rather see who's voting someone off the island or who's voting for American Idol or who's dancing with the celebutards, politics is very involved in everybody's life. Now, some people, every piece of legislation in this kind of imperialist scheme has winners and victims. And increasingly, the winners are a small cabal of bankers and connected dirty politicians and, of course, those whom they lavish with public benefits in order to buy a political constituency, and everybody else is a victim. And the victim class is growing, and those who are being forced to become dependent on government is growing. Of the 50 million Americans who are on food stamps, I would argue most of those people don't want to be on food stamps. But when you cut veterans' benefits, when you cut their health benefits after sending them across the world to be blown up and have their heads bashed in, and when you eliminate American manufacturing, you destroy the economy, you debase the dollar, and there are no jobs, people have no choice. But that's exactly what they want. They want us to be clients of the state. They want us to be dependent on the state. Most people don't want that. So you've got to help them and wake them up and get them involved so that we can roll the tide back. That's what 2014 is about. What did you do today to create a force multiplier? Did you call about audit the Fed? That's a pretty big deal, and that is actually a broad issue that can transcend party. You've got people like Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, Rand Paul for it, including people like socialist Bernie Sanders from Vermont. So it is a broad appeal, so get busy. McConnell's phone number, he is allegedly the minority leader of the, quote, conservative party in the Senate. His phone number is 202-224-2541. Call him and tell him you want the Fed audited. John Boehner's phone number is 202-225-0600. Call him and tell him you want the Fed audited. And especially call
– you got the number for the bar?
For the bar? Where Boehner is? It's the old Ebbett Grill. It's actually a pretty nice place. You probably bump into him there. But I got the number for the rat, the little desert mouse. Princess Harry Reid, phone number 202-224-3542 or 1-866-SENREID. And you know what? While you're at it, why don't you give Rand Paul's office a call and tell him you really appreciate that he's fighting. You know, sometimes you get beat up so much, he's taking all the arrows in the back for you, he's fighting for you, give him a little boost. I mean, the man almost fainted on the floor of the Senate, someone had to bring him a Snickers bar because he was, you know, pouring out his blood sugar and holding his urine for 13 hours so he could teach you about the Constitution and make the president answer the question that he won't kill Americans on American soil. So get busy, get involved, create a force multiplier. Back to you, Chris.
I was just chuckling. I was thinking about not peeing for that long, what that had to be like. Because he did not prep. He didn't know he was going to filibuster that day. So he didn't have any prep time at all. You know, this is an important conversation. And I just hope that we're not beating a dead horse with our audience or our group. I made a note today on the financial thread saying, you know, if I had my choice, this would be what my group is about, would be just about economics. And the reason is like I said before, if you don't have economic freedom, you're never going to have personal freedom, and all these things that we get caught up in, the news of the day, aren't going to mean anything, because when you talk about the numbers of unemployment, which is not 7%, it's double that, because you have to look at the people who are no longer on the rolls, and then you look at people who are unemployed. You have to ask yourself, of all the new jobs created in the last 5 years, how many of them are part-time jobs under 29 hours a week so they don't have to be responsible for Obamacare? That's a huge percentage of the number. You got to look at the people on food stamps, look at the people on, you know, this whole new entitlement class of disability. You know, the millions and millions and millions and millions of people who have signed up on disability. When they stand up there, or President Obama stands up there and tells everybody how wonderful everything is, and then you go, okay, that was a really nice political speech, and then you go over here and you look at the statistics, we're up the creek. I mean, it's that simple. I mean, they're still printing money. They claim they were going to cut quantitative easing back by $10 billion, but number one, it hadn't been done, and number two, if everything was so good, why are they still printing $85 billion a month? You know, I mean, that's the only reason you print money is to secure.
No, they cut that. They tapered that, Chris. They're only printing $75 billion a month.
Well, okay. And have they actually followed through with that?
I have no idea. You really think that anybody knows what the hell the Fed's doing? That's what they said. But, I mean, still, $75 billion. That's 75,000 million. That's a huge number.
That's a trillion. Right. Yeah, it's over $1 trillion a year. They've been doing it nonstop every year. The Fed has a $4 trillion balance sheet right now on U.S. money or U.S. currency, because it ain't real money. So, you know, and we're at $17 trillion debt, and they're sitting on $4 trillion, and they're still printing $1 trillion a year. And with Obama in office, who refuses to do anything that is necessary to do to restart an economy after a depression or a recession, he refuses to do any of it. You know, reform government, cut regulations, cut taxes. We've raised taxes. We've raised fees. We've done all this stuff. So, I mean, there's no reason they're going to stop. So we got three more years. That's another $3 trillion. And with Yellen in there, she'll probably boost it, because she's, you know, this woman is just brilliant. You know, doctor's degree in stupidity. I mean, it's just, you know, she was like one of the people that said, oh, yeah, everything's fine. We're not in a housing bubble. And now she's the head of our monetary system for the country. Oh, my God. I mean, it's almost like a bad movie some days when we get on a roll and we start talking about this stuff. The good news is, okay, is we have some butt-kicking people in Congress who are fighting hard for sound monetary policy, for protecting our civil liberties, and we have some great people, and which came out of either 2010 or 2012. Most of it came out of the Tea Party movement in 2010. We've got 24 states that are totally controlled by Republicans, 34 Republican governors came out of 2010. So there's a lot of good things going on. It just seems like there's a lot of crap going on right now because you know, all of his bad policies from the first 4 years are all coming to a head. That's why we're seeing so much turmoil. And that's, we don't want to talk about this stuff to make people all depressed and drink more. That's not the goal. The goal is the encouraging message, and that message is 2014, we're really looking good for growing the House and taking the Senate, which would put a stop if you get the right people in there. I'm not saying Republicans. I'm saying getting the right one in there okay?
Yep.
And adding to the numbers that we have in the House and Senate of people who care about the Constitution, care about their constituency, and doing what they, you know, doing what they claimed when they were running for office, and we can put a stop to some of this stuff, and that's the good news. But that ain't going to happen
yep.
unless you as an individual go out and get 10 people and educate them and help them get 10 people and grow this thing, because that was what 2010 was about. It was less than a 2% increase in voting mm-hmm. turnout. And we had one of the most record-sweeping wins across this country for a reversal against socialism, basically. It was that simple. So
yep.
it's important
to go ahead. Swell the ranks. Believe it or not, we've only got 47 minutes of live air left. So for all of you listening
wow.
live, and there's a bunch of you, at midnight Eastern, about 47 minutes, Blog Talk Radio is going to cut you off from the live broadcast in your browser or mobile browser. The only way you'll be able to listen after that, because I seriously doubt we're going to finish in 47 minutes, is to call in and listen on your phone. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. If you're listening in archive, just keep on rolling. We'll try to get everything in before the time runs out. But real quick, we're going to take a six-minute break and have a little bit of fun because something quite topical. First, we've been talking about Rand Paul's epic filibuster in March. We also had, it wasn't technically a filibuster, but Senator Cruz, the junior senator from Texas, who hasn't even been in the Senate for a year, and he's causing a lot of waves, gave a 21-hour speech trying to inspire the spineless Republicans in the Senate to actually stand with him and the way that the conservatives moved the House to defund or delay Obamacare, and it was pretty stellar. But one of the things he talked about in there, which has come full circle now and it's pretty topical, makes you wonder, could it be because Senator Cruz brought this up during his 21-hour speech that we're suddenly talking about the Duck Commander here at the end of December? But Ted Cruz and Mike Lee gave an hour-long constitutional law session that was just phenomenal. It's all available on YouTube.
Yes,
I really
awesome.
Recommend you check it out. But here's 6 minutes with Ted Cruz talking about Duck Dynasty.
Who is the one and only winner of the Gemini Crockett Contest? This boy is huge,
like fire.
So start melting, ladies, because the boy is hotter than hot. He's hot.
Hot.
Hot. Ah! Right side, right heel, right head, right on.
Right on, right on.
Right on, right on. And he's got something to say to those 50 billion pair of ears out there. Pop it, D-Man.
I'm
unbelievable. He's gonna set the world on fire. Right here from 5 to 7, you know everything there is to know about that
G-Man.
His dream, his desire, his most intimate of intimate. And what I'm looking at, intimate is his stud muffin's middle name. So tell me, my man, you nervous in the service?
Not really.
Freeze those knees, my sweet. The curve's in the plate, knees on the cake. Yesterday's frog will be tomorrow's friend of lockdown paradise. A hotel of 1,001 follies, lollies, and nickel lollies. A magic fountain flow of non-stop wine, women, and
noisy,
all night long.
All night long, all night.
Ooh. A little telescopic always because the sky is clear if you ride home to mama. Right here from 5 to 7, I'll be your voice, you dumb. And I'll be hot on the trail of the sexiest man in the year. D-Man, your man.
I get mad, man. I'm angry, but that's all right. I'm not holding it against you. I said, see, I can love you anyway. So, I'm not loving you, and it's not contingent upon how you feel about me. You may not even like me, but hey, here's the good news. I love you anyway. So here we go. And I just go on with it. Because you can't please everybody. You know what I'm saying? Everyone who lives a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. So, to escape unscathed, you just got to let it roll off your back and keep on going. If your motives are sincere, That's about all you can do. I love them. I'm going to tell them the good news, and hopefully they'll turn. But
according to Congress, almost shouldn't exist. Yet a lot of wisdom. Millions of Americans tune into Duck Dynasty. So I want to point out just a few words of wisdom from Duck Dynasty that are probably good for all of us to hear. Willie observed, you put five rednecks on a mower, it's going to be epic. Phil said, in a subdivision, you call 911. At home, I am 911. Cy said, some people say I'm a dreamer. Others say, if you fall asleep at work again, we're going to have to let you go. Jace said, redneck rule number one. Most things can be fixed with duct tape and extension cords. That's actually very true. Phil said, I think our problem is a spiritual one. Phil also said, when you get older and you start dating, I want you to be able to say one thing. I can bait a hook. One day, maybe Caroline and Catherine will be able to say that. Phil also said very simply, happy, happy, happy. I'll say this to the junior senator from Utah. When we defund Obamacare, we're all going to be happy, happy, happy. Miss Kay said, our marriage is living proof that love and family can get you through everything. Cy said, I live by my own rules, reviewed, revised, and approved by my wife, but still my own. Jep said, faith, family, and facial hair. Point out to the junior senator from Utah, if we continue doing this long enough, we may have facial hair on the floor of the Senate. That's all right. Willie said, are you kidding me? I'm straight up Hunger Games with a bow. Cy said, Ford F-150, Chevy Silverado, Dodge Ram, Toyota Tundra. As a married man, these are the only pickup lines I'm allowed to use. Jace said, where I come from, your truck is an exact reflection of your personality. Cy said, I make up people all the time to get out of stuff. Cy also said, a redneck walking into Bass Pro Shops gets more excited than a 12-year-old girl going to a Justin Bieber concert. Let me point out that that is Justin Bieber, B-E-A-V-E-R. Cy also said, your beard is so hairy, even Dora can't explore it. Cy also said, your beard's so stupid, it takes 2 hours to watch 60 Minutes. And finally, Cy said, I am the MacGyver of cooking. You bring me a piece of bread, cabbage, coconut, mustard greens, pig feet, pine cones, and a woodpecker, I'll make you a good chicken pot pie. Now, let me suggest that kind of homespun wisdom, what this country was built on. It's who we are.
I guess it's over. So, you know, the first thing I want to point out was that part that was a little garbled in the beginning. We were trying to have a little fun with that. But for those of you who don't know what that was Fifth Element with Bruce Willis. And you can go to YouTube and Ruby Red, he was this news announcer, you know, on the show, and it was a little rough, but it is a hilarious film, one of my favorite films. Second point, I think, you know, listening to Ted there, and it was kind of interesting, but having grown up, you know, I grew up in Southern Oregon, and a lot of my family were from Oklahoma and Arkansas and all deep, you know, and originally from the deep South, but you know, it just seemed like it was a simple life. Family was everything. Hard work was not scoffed at. You know, there was a lot of humor, a lot of love, a lot of forgiveness. And it built this country. you know, coming out of the First World War and the Second World War. And somewhere along the line, somebody decided that family didn't matter, God didn't matter, your children aren't yours, you know, it takes a village, and things started going to hell in a handbasket. I mean, that's pretty fundamentally basic. Now, we used to have conversations about this, and we used to have politicians that talked about it, but it seems like it's gotten to a point where it's so uncomfortable for everybody that nobody can talk about it. You know, and there's another thing, too. You know, you look at all the statistics, and they're all out there. You know, you can have whole radio shows on this conversation, but we're at a point, really, in this country where people are having to make a decision of, do we keep going down this road that has been laid out for us by this existing administration and all the people in the key roles in our school systems and our colleges, or do we reach back a little bit in time to time-tested things that matter and work and start to, you know, that pendulum to swing back the other direction? I was reading an interesting article because, you know, it seems like the liberals of this country are trying to model America and turn it into some kind of socialist European model. Well, if you look at Europe right now, many countries in Europe have replaced all their liberal, hardcore liberal socialism, Marxism, communism governments, and they're starting to, that pendulum is swinging back towards that conservative, smaller government, you know, individual freedom, personal responsibility model. So Europe is swinging back because, like they say, socialism is a great idea until you run out of other people's money. And here's the most important thing, back to economics. If we couldn't borrow and print because we're the trade dollar of the world, then we couldn't be doing the things that we're doing, and we would have had to reform America a long time ago. And politicians will not self-correct. There's so much greed and fear in the political environment that it just won't happen. It is rare air to find a Mike Lee or a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul or a Justin Amos or Trey Gowdy or any of these kind of guys. It's rare air, and it's unfortunate because that's what we, when we vote for them, that's what we want. We want them to go there and to fight for us, and they go there and something happens to them, and it's very rare to find one that doesn't get totally bought and sold by the corrupt machine of Washington, D.C., and all that exists in that environment. But we're definitely at a crossroads, and you, as an individual, have a say. And I know people say, oh, voting doesn't matter, and it's all corrupt anyway, and, you know, and there's just this fatalistic mindset. If you buy into that crap, then you might as well just give up and go join the Democratic Party. But if you're not going to give up, and you don't want to be a socialist, communist country, then you got to get off your rusty dusty, turn off the TV, quit listening to, you know, the media pundits, educate yourself, and help educate other people, and get in there and make your vote count in 2014. That simple. You there, Rex?
I am here, and those are all great points. And I think one of the most interesting things about the whole Phil Robertson Duck Dynasty controversy is it reveals that this battle, even though it has political implications, and that's what we talk about on this show, this is a cultural battle. This is a battle about who we are as Americans. Now, that doesn't mean that every one of us has to be a Bible-thumping redneck, right? It means that you have to be who God made you to be, and that is up to you to figure that out, and it is up to you to exercise your liberty to be who you're supposed to be. But you can't do that if it is the government that is determining what kind of light bulb you can have, how much water you can flush, what kind of GMO foods you have to eat, where you can drive,
what you can say.
And we're getting to the point where they can tell you what you can think. And that's what political correctness and cultural Marxism is all about. It is about shutting your mind and your voice down before you even think about speaking. This is what 1984 was about, the book by George Orwell. This is what Brave New World by Aldous Huxley was about. And we're approaching that. That's why the NSA is spying on you. That is why the political correctness is being pumped into your house through the television. It is why the movies coming out of Hollywood are mostly crap. And you have to take the high ground that liberty unites people. Well, yeah, the common core. So you have to take the high ground. You have to be active. You cannot be passive. You cannot be distracted by bread and circuses. You cannot be distracted by frivolous entertainment. I'm not saying that frivolous entertainment doesn't have its place. Like Chris, I happen to like the movie The Fifth Element, although I think that it has some very valid existential points in it. It's not just entertaining. But you have to be involved, and the most important thing to do is not worry about the results. Because not a single one of us, not a Rand Paul, not a Ted Cruz, not a Justin Amash, not a single one of us can make all these changes by ourselves. But we can each do our part. And what you have to do is ask yourself every day, did I do the most that I could do in 2014 to make sure that the Constitution is defended by our elected representatives come November Election Day? That's what you have to ask yourself every single day. If you didn't do everything that you could, then you failed. And if you did everything that you could, the results don't belong to you. They belong to God.
Right.
And that is right. What that this is about. That is why Ted Cruz took to the floor for 21 hours. That is why Rand Paul took to the floor for 13 hours. They're showing you that they're up there fighting for you. And what Ted Cruz and Mike Lee did with the defunded website that got 2.1 million signatures with the 21-hour speech, it was to inspire. Yes, they are leaders, but a good leader doesn't want followers. A good leader wants more leaders. If you heard Ted Cruz's voice, if you're listening to this show, if you heard Rand Paul's filibuster, you're that leader. Lead. Force multiplier. Get others involved. Show them how constitutional limits on government and liberty, provided we're also a virtuous society, is the way that you create the maximum benefit for the most people and everybody can live free. And that's what this is really about. Go ahead.
You know, no, that's fine. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But, you know, I was thinking about 2012 and President Obama winning again with 3.5 million less votes than he won the first time, and Romney getting less votes than Bush got. And so, you know, when you look at that, it depends on how, you know, what you want to glean from that. But I glean that people are just disgusted and they didn't even turn out. And yet when you go back to 2010 and I brought up the statistics that less than 2% more people turned out and it was sweeping winds across the country. Can you imagine a midterm that had a 40% turnout, what that would be like? See, politicians want you distracted, they want you dejected, they want you depressed, they want you frustrated, they want you broke, they want you dependent, and they want to tell you how to think so that you'll just either not show up or just vote the way they tell you to vote. And that is what you have to fight internally, is you have to say, I am not going to be dejected, I'm not going to be depressed. Yeah, life's tough, you know. My parents were children in the Depression and went through the First World War, Second World War. My dad fought in the Korean War. I mean, they went through a lot in a short period of years. My grandparents, you know, left Oklahoma in a Model A Ford with everything they owned on dirt roads and came to Oregon trying to find a better way, you know, because of the Depression. It was ugly, and they survived it. You know, they had, I really believe that, you know, it was a different time, and one of the things that was important was, you know, those core values, you know, God, country, family, things like that. And people struggled through it, and they made a better life for their children, who made a better life for their children. And that is the American way. And somewhere along the line, I think that, you know, just observing, you know, the tone, whether it's social media, the mainstream media, or whatever, is it just people are just frustrated and confused. And back to what you were saying about the Duck Dynasty thing, I was watching I was going by the TV and Fox was on and The Five was on. And it was really neat because they were talking about their their spiritual life. And Becca was talking about, you know, his bout with alcoholism and getting saved. And I'm like going, I mean, I sat down, you know, and they were talking about Duck Dynasty is what started the conversation. And it was really neat to see them kind of drop the their media personalities and then just everybody just get real and talk like human beings. And it kind of caught my attention. I actually sat down and watched the segment because it was touching. You know, it was human and it was real people talking about their faith and their life and their struggles and telling their stories about life. And I'm just going, that's what we need more of in this country. And I think that's one of the reasons that Duck Dynasty is so popular. That miniseries on the Bible, that was 100 million people tuned into that. You tell me people aren't hungry. You know, when you've got a culture coming out of Hollywood that is just ripping everything traditional, religious out of our society, perverting everything and just trying to change us, you know, and make us something that is alien to the nature of the human soul. And to see people start to, you know, to gravitate towards those things. Because you and I talk, I mean, we could do religious shows, you know what I'm saying? But we're not. We're kind of secular radio, blah, blah, blah. But it's our life, you know. It's how we believe. It's what drives us. It's the things that are important to us, you know, permeate our conversations all the time. And this is important stuff because it needs to be discussed. And for some reason, somehow, the powers that be in the media have made it where people are afraid to talk about their faith or their beliefs or their story that brought them to where they are. You know,
yeah, unless
it's important
unless
stuff going on right now.
Yeah, unless their belief happens to be that, we're going to revitalize the pagan gods from, 2 millennia ago or talk about, you know, all manner of sexual perversion. But again, you know, free speech means that you have a right to be offended, so they have a right to say that stuff. The problem is that you cannot make government make us good, but you can certainly have government create an environment of license and debauchery, which makes a populace far easier to control. But if you want to be good, if you want to help people be good, then you've got to do that yourself within the culture. And liberty is to guarantee your sovereign rights from God to be free to do these things, then you have to win the argument in the public square. But what people are looking for is something real, the epic human drama. And the fact is that what the filibuster, the epic speech talked about, and that's precisely why the opening song was I Need a Hero, not that Ted Cruz and Rand Paul are to be worshipped as heroes, but they are being heroic. They are fighting. And it is important to support them and join in the battle. And the thing is, it's very, very exciting. What the filibuster, the speech, and the Duck Dynasty controversy has revealed is that there is a spark for something epic, a heroic drama, a battle for victory for the good and the true and the beautiful. And you got to think about this. As dire as the situation seems, currently there are 7 billion people alive on this planet. 300 million of us are Americans, and America is the imperial power on the globe. What we do here affects everybody. You have the privilege to be here now at this point in history to fight for liberty, to fight for truth, to fight for justice, to fight for the good, the true, and the beautiful. It should be exciting. When you get up in the morning, you should be proud that you've been chosen to be here now to make a stand. And that's what's exciting about it. And what they're trying to do is paint those people who love liberty and our constitutional republic and the freedom of religion as kooks, far right-wing legislative arsonists, hostage takers, teabaggers, or whatever else. And so they train their sights on those that are in the public square fighting, which is why they try to create a wedge between Ted and Rand. It is why they keep attacking Ted Cruz as the crazy fool who went on a quixotic journey to try to defund the law of the land, right? But then, of course, when the sequester's the law of the land, well, that just we throw that one out because we don't like that one, but we like the Obamacare. That's the kind of craziness that's going on. And, in fact, today on ABC, I believe, I forget the guy's name, but he was trying to get Ted Cruz to admit defeat and say that the shutdown was his fault and it was a dumb strategy. That's the meme they're trying to set out there. But Ted's too smart for that. And Ted didn't back away from it. He's a fighter. He's fighting for you, and you'd better see what he is doing. Now, that doesn't mean you trust him completely. I don't trust any of them. And Ted will tell you that. Keep an eye on all of them. But he's there fighting behind enemy lines within his own party because it is the party establishment. And if you notice, if you look recently, the Republican leadership has spent more time, energy, and vigor fighting conservatives in their own party than they have fighting the Democrats. Here's 4 minutes with Ted Cruz.
Cruz found his most receptive audience among House conservatives, meeting secretly one night in the middle of the government shutdown with Tea Partiers in a Mexican restaurant on Capitol Hill called Tortilla Coast.
You had a famous meeting right here in this restaurant. What was that like, meeting with those House Republicans? They, in a way, were looking to you as
well,
a leader.
Well, we had lots of meetings throughout the year and throughout the shutdown as well. And nobody should be surprised that members of Congress are talking to each other. It doesn't happen nearly enough.
But it's rare to see a senator have the kind of influence that you had, especially a freshman senator, a first-year senator, over the House.
Well, with respect, I actually don't think it was a case of my having influence at all. I think it's a case of the American people having influence.
Right, but this was a strategy that you were putting forth, and they jumped on board.
Well, no. This is something that a lot of people came forward and agreed with. And at the end of the day, the conservatives who met here at Tortilla Coast, who met repeatedly and continue to have conversations, what we were trying to do is listen to the American people, listen to those over 2 million people who are saying, this thing ain't working.
The House Republicans went along with the Cruz strategy, and the government shut down for 16 days, a move widely seen as a political disaster for Republicans that accomplished nothing. But the day Republicans caved and Congress voted to reopen the government, Cruz declared victory.
We saw the House of Representatives take a courageous stand, listening to the American people. That was a remarkable victory.
As the year draws to a close, Republican leaders have made it clear they think the strategy pushed by Cruz and outside conservative groups was a total failure.
Frankly, I just think that they've lost all credibility. You know, they pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. If you recall, one of these groups stood up and said, well, we never really thought it would work. Are you kidding me?
But the year also ended with Ted Cruz as the most high-profile Tea Party conservative in Congress. Again at Tortilla Coast, Cruz reflected on all that.
When you think about the tradition of first-year senators, they tend to be seen but not heard. You've had, like you said, a whirlwind for a first year as a U.S. senator. Does that surprise you? I mean, you're on Time Magazine's list of the runner-ups to the Pope for Person of the Year.
That was a very strange thing. This is a city where it's all politics all the time. And I'm trying to do my best not to pay attention to the politics, to focus
really
on fixing the problems. I know that's hard to believe, but because no one in this town does that. This is a time for people to step up and do the right thing, and that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, you've had a couple of months to think about this whole government shutdown strategy. Now that it's over, in hindsight, are you prepared to say that it was a mistake, it wasn't the right tactic?
I think it was absolutely a mistake for President Obama and Harry Reid to force a government shutdown.
Now, you know, even John Boehner has said this was a Republican shutdown.
Look, I can't help what other people say, and John, I understand that in the media, every day the media reported the Republican shutdown.
No, but come on. I mean, we're a couple months away from this. The only reason why this happened is because you insisted, Republicans insisted, that Obamacare be defunded as a condition of funding the government. If you took away that insistence, there would be no shutdown.
You know, really. You've got conservatives who stood strong and said, let's stop the train wreck that is Obamacare. And you've got Democrats in the middle of the shutdown. President Obama called every Senate Republican to the White House, sat us in a room and said, I called you here to tell you we're not going to negotiate, we're not going to compromise on anything. Repeatedly, Republicans were compromising, trying to find a middle ground. And repeatedly, Democrats said, no compromise, shut it down.
No compromise, shut it down. That was the Desert Mouse, Harry Reid, that did that. And, you know, John Boehner saying this was a Republican shutdown. Well, what he means is that the conservatives in the House actually exercised their power given under the Constitution to limit the expansion of unconstitutional executive power. But then it went over to the Senate, and despite all of the efforts of the conservatives in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, who's up for re-election in 2014, and Matt Bevin is opposing him in a primary. So if you know anybody in Kentucky, get busy. If you've got money, give. If you've got time, make calls. Mitch McConnell surrendered the Senate to Harry Reid and funded Obamacare. You can call it Obamacare all you like, this disaster, but the fact is before it was Obamacare, it was Romney Care, and now you can call it Rhino Care because the Republicans made this happen because they think it gives them something to run against in 2014, that you'll be so afraid of Obamacare you'll elect any Republican irrespective of their position. And that's not true because they tried that crap in 2012 by thinking that Obama is so bad that anybody but Obama can win, and yet Karl Rove found the one guy that would lose to Barack Obama. And that's exactly where they are now. Good.
Sorry. Well, not just that. It hurt our down ballot candidates, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much the whole point. And so what they're trying to do now is show you how Ted Cruz is just in it for himself and it's just bravado and it would go nowhere. Well, it only went nowhere because of Mitch McConnell and Bob Bailout Corker and Lindsey Lightness Loafers Graham and Jihad Jane McCormick, Senator Arizona, and all of those other rhinos. Those are the guys who've got to go, and it's up to you to get rid of them. Okay? Now, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to run some unknown Libertarian Party or Constitution Party candidate against them? Sorry, you haven't taken the first state yet. That's not going to happen. So find the Republican candidate who's actually conservative or Libertarian or both and run them against the rhinos and take down the rhino establishment and stop the Democrat socialist agenda.
Well, one of the things, am I on there? Yeah. One of the things that I think is important, and you and I followed this pretty tight right through the whole, you know, the conversation, the semi-filibuster speech that wasn't really a filibuster, and then the Republicans putting out a, you know, delay Obamacare, you know, defund it and all that kind of stuff. And it's interesting because, you know, they want to pin that on Ted, and it wasn't Ted Cruz. He didn't write the Republican bill. He didn't pass the Republican bill in the House. He just stood there for 21 hours and spoke the truth. And that's what I find amazing. It was probably some of the weakest reporting I've seen, trying to turn it on him, including that little piece from Boehner. I need a drink. you know, doing his little thing. That's the most words I've ever heard that man speak in a row, you know, and without
a
crying or
liver.
Coughing or something. Oh, my God. You know, speak of the House, are you kidding me? Remember how hard we fought to get people to, you know, call a handful of people and get that change?
Mark Willis. Before Mark Willis.
Yeah, I know. It's so... The only frustrating part I really have in this whole political environment is the lack of action on people's parts. I think people get it. I think people are starting to realize that, it's both parties. Yeah, it's people in both parties. Okay, there's some people fighting for the Constitution and our freedoms and sound economics. They need to be supported. That means you need to support them. And then you need to learn who the players are, the upcoming superstars, and who's running, and support them. That's really what you need to do. That means you've got to prepare to be a part of the political process in 2014. If if your fear of what Obama will do is great enough, then you need to act. Not just post about it, not just bitch about it, not just post articles of the day and news of the day and Obama this and Obama that and Obama this and Obama that. I knew who Obama was 5 years ago. I get it. I don't need every article in the world posted on my group about what Obama did here or did there. We already know what his goal is, what his plan is, and how he's going to do it. He's going to do it unconstitutionally. He's going to do it without Congress. He's going to do whatever the hell he can push. What you have to do is support people who have enough cojones to fight it. It's that simple. You know, that's how this great republic was founded. And it isn't the first or the last time we're going to have power-hungry people that get in there and abuse the Constitution. I could do a two-hour show on all the abuses of the Constitution during the Bush administration. And I know Republicans don't want to hear that, but it's facts. I could just list facts off with no emotion and no personal jabs at GW, you know, because I think he was a good guy. I just think he had some really bad people around him. And so here we are, you know, a dozen years later, and we're in a mess, and it's going to take people rising up and making a difference. And part of that is educating yourself, and the other part is voting, and the other part is getting other people to do the same. That's simple.
Yep. It's you got to create a force multiplier, and instead of just whining and complaining, get off your butt and do something about it. And if you're already doing something about it, I hate to break it to you, you got to do more. You see, we all have a tendency to want to blame others for not doing their part because we've done something. But see, that's the wrong attitude. That's like acting like the prodigal brother's older brother, the prodigal son's older brother, right? You know, why are you going out to meet him, Father? He squandered his wealth. I was here working hard, and now you're favoring him. No, you have to do more because you know more. Whoever has more knowledge has more responsibility. Whoever has more capability has more responsibility. That doesn't mean the others are off the hook. But the number one reason people always say why they never joined this organization or joined this group or thought about becoming a Christian or thought about being a conservative or thought about being involved in politics, the number one reason people always give for all of these things is nobody asked me. Now, that's not a really good excuse, but that's the reality of it. Nobody asked me. Have you asked somebody to listen to this show? Have you asked somebody to sign the Audit the Fed petition? Have you asked somebody to make a phone call to their senator, their congressman, join Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom, call the Senate and tell them you want to audit the Fed? Have you asked them? Sometimes that's all that it takes. Now, they might have an objection. I wouldn't recommend wasting your time trying to convert liberals to the conservative cause. They're pretty much committed to their blue team of donkey jackasses. No matter what, they're still trying to defend Obamacare, for goodness sake, a program that's expanded Medicaid, signed up 300,000 people who didn't have insurance before at the cost of 6 million people who did have insurance and have now lost it. They're still trying to defend that. But there are Republican voters who don't know the difference between a rhino and a conservative. There are Republican voters who don't know what a libertarian is. They think it's, you know, Gary Johnson as opposed to Ron Paul. Educate them, reach out to them, get them involved. 90 million people didn't vote in the last presidential election. Reach out to these people. They're in your workplace, they're at your church, they're at your synagogue, they're in your car mechanic shop, they're at your local bakery. Reach out to them, and don't be afraid. Don't fear being... Yeah.
114 million people did not vote.
Okay, so it's even worse. There you go. It's even worse. You know, don't be afraid of, you know, oh, I don't want to hear about politics, or you're a teabagger, right-wing extremist. Don't be afraid. Stand up, because you're going to lose your country if you're timid. Victory goes to those who fight. Those who are timid lose. Those who surrender before the fight starts lose. Fight. Be the hero. The leader.
Sorry.
No, I'm go ahead. I'm done.
Sorry. I was just thinking historically, if you look at in the 20th century, you look at whether it was Russia or whatever the case, Germany, Austria, Austria was dumb enough to actually vote to have Hitler come in and take over the country. I mean, come on. But if you look historically, you will see that all totalitarianism takeovers outside of hardcore, you know, where they came in with an army, occurred during very bad economic times when people were struggling and people were in their height of fear and they were looking for somebody to fix it for them. That's the problem. And that's how Obama got elected. And unfortunately, we have a lot of fearful, confused, dependent people in this country on both sides. Okay. And
yep.
I think it's important to say that, because I'm not like, you know, the 47% comment. You know, there are people on both sides who continually vote people in based on promises to give them more. sooner or later that fails. We're in that point in time in history where that system of giving people stuff so I can have a vote, which kind of reminds me of, what was that country? Oh, Rome, that fell. I know, yeah. I'm being sarcastic, but there's a lot of parallels there.
Yep, a lot of parallels. And here's the interesting thing. We started out talking about the Fed, and your point is absolutely 100% correct. One of the reasons Rome failed was debasement of their currency and diminishing warrior capacity, plus their moral breakdown, because they allowed the Greeks, who were pederasts, to educate their children and introduced moral decay into their society. Sort of what's going on here.
Bingo.
Now, you think about it. Since 1913, when the Fed came online, it started building its power control. Okay, we had an economic downturn in 1920. It was over by 1921 because the Fed wasn't so powerful yet. They fixed that during the 20s, and you had a boom. And then came 29 and the bust. And the Fed had more power then, and it managed to extend that depression for 17 years. And what was the New Deal response to that? Give them more power.
Yes.
And then what Chris talked about earlier – right, then we ran out of gold in 71, so under Nixon, we went off the gold standard completely. And since then, their power has been expanding. And now, a century later, we are nearing the demise of our currency, a total economic collapse, which always leads to famine, disease, fear, chaos, and most especially, war. And people die. This is real. And your fight to win is not about your team or your favorite candidate being popular or you being accepted at the club meetings and the Tea Party meetings and rubbing elbows with everybody and showing how smart that you are. This is an existential threat to our way of life. And if you're not in the battle, you either get out of the way or you declare yourself an enemy of this country. And that's what it's about. Now, do something. Rand Paul is fighting his ass off for you. The audit the Fed bill is the first step in exposing how bad this thing is so that more people will be aware of it, the news media will be forced to talk about it, and then hopefully we can start rolling this thing back. You can't end it in one day. It'll be completely destructive. But you can pare it back and have a soft crash landing over, say, the next 5 years. Here's 3 minutes on Rand Paul talking about Janet Yellen ending the Fed. After that, we'll have 3 minutes live. And then we're going to try to wrap up the show, but you will not be able to hear it live. There's a lot of you listening live. You have to call in 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. You can listen to the close of the show on the phone. Or, as always, go to our Blog Talk Radio page, search out Liberty's Thunder. You can listen to any of our shows anytime in your browser. It costs you nothing. And we very much appreciate you spreading the word and sharing the show. Here's Senator Rand Paul.
This is Tom Ferrara with Reuters on Capitol Hill. Today our guest is Senator Rand Paul, Kentucky. Senator, the Yellen nomination to the Fed, at this point, what are you planning to do? Do you still plan to put a hold on it?
I plan to slow it down as much as possible. And in the old days, you could hold things forever. You can't quite do that now, and they'll overcome you if they get 60 votes. And in all likelihood, they probably will. But I think there needs to be some questions answered. For example, 2-3 years ago now, we passed audit the Fed in the House with every Republican and 100 Democrats, overwhelming bipartisan support, and the Democrats have been holding it hostage in the Senate. They won't let us vote on it. So I'd really like to see a vote on audit the Fed before we consider her nomination.
If they give you a vote, you'll step aside and let them vote as soon as they want.
I'm the nicest person in D.C. if they'll let me have a vote on audit the Fed.
What are you trying to find out from the audit? What do you think is there? What would you like to look at?
I think there's several things people would like to know. One, we'd like to know about monetary policy, setting of the interest rates, how the deliberations go. We'd also like to know that when credit is being expanded and contracted, are there any individual private entities who are profiting from these things? For example, the questions often asked to me by my constituents, why does the Fed have to have an intermediary to buy Treasury bills? Somebody makes a lot of money off of that, so we've expanded the Fed asset sheet by $4 trillion. Is there a real reason somebody has to make a profit off of that?
The argument against your bill seems to be that it'll hurt the Fed's independence and could interrupt the monetary thinking.
You could look at it another way and say it would be increased congressional oversight, which Congress created the Fed. I would think that your representatives of your people, you would want to have oversight. The other consideration is we've got a lot of people that go in and out of government, to Wall Street banks, to the Treasury, to the Fed, many of them making hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Should we not be privy to some of the decision-making they're making and whether or not it affects people then they go to work for in the future? So I think these are considerations of transparency, and there's every reason we should know more about what happens. All of this is a look back. I think we're looking back at data a year later. So I don't think it affects any day-to-day actions of the Federal Reserve, nor does it restrict or restrain them. But when you are able to open up and peer at something, people tend to behave more when they know they're being watched.
Your concerns, your objections seem to be with the Fed itself, not with Janet Yellen. Do you think at the end of the day you might end up voting for Janet Yellen?
I haven't made a final determination on that, but you're right. In slowing her nomination down, I'm not a big fan of easy money policy. I think Bernanke's policy has been too easy, and I think Yellen will have an even easier money policy. I don't think that's ultimately good for price stability or keeping the value of the dollar.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of hers, but at the same time, this is about more than just her. It is about whether or not the Federal Reserve should get scrutiny and oversight by Congress.
Now, some have accused him of misusing the filibuster because he's trying to bully the Senate through this nomination process to take a look at his bill. Well, what is he supposed to do? That's his job, and those are the tools that are available. You know, everybody wants, you know, to sing kumbaya and get along and reach across the aisle, and I'm bipartisan and blah, blah, blah. Whenever they get bipartisan, they get along too well, we get screwed. You want people who fight and use every tool in their power to make things happen. And when I say make things happen, I mean stop all the crap that's been going on for 100 years and actually get things rolled back. I don't want them doing more. I don't want them giving me more stuff. I don't want them providing me with more benefits. I want them to leave me alone so that I can take care of myself, my family, my community. And if you're a real conservative or a real libertarian, you want the same. So that's what you got to do. We're about to go off the air, Chris, so anybody who wants to listen, 646-649-1013. We'll be wrapping up in the next 30 minutes if you want to listen live to you.
Well, I think it's just very interesting. I like his calm because I listen to other people like Peter Schiff, and he ain't too calm because he calls it like he sees it. You know, he was a guy that one of the few people
he's more like
called
me.
The last – yeah, he was one of the few people that is in the professional investment world that called that we were going to have the crash that we had in 2008, and he saw it. Rand, being a politician, has got to be very guarded and very careful because anything he says is going to be scrutinized. He's going to be – everybody's going to try to, you know, roll him around his dad. You know what I'm saying? So he has a, you know, he has a political position that he has to hold on to, but in a very calm way, he's saying, we need to get a handle on this insanity because it's going to crash if we don't. And a lot of people, you know, say, oh, that's conspiracy theory. You know, economies have crashed multiple times through the history of the world, and fiat currencies never last. And if you don't understand what that is, you need to educate yourself. You know, it comes back to that point of, you know, citizen governance. You have to understand economics. If you don't understand the economics of the country you live in, what the hell are you doing? I mean, I just don't get that. I just do not understand why people won't take the time. They don't teach it in school. So, you know, you have to self-educate. And there's good material out there. Mises.org is a great place to start. You know, and we try to cover a bit of it. You know, we try not to do whole shows on economics, but, you know, we try to cover a little bit of it on each show. I have, you know, 1,000 post threads going on the group where we post the important stuff and educational material and discuss whenever people have questions. It's important because if you don't get it, they're going to play games, they're going to pass bills, and they're going to keep passing bills based on what corporations, government entities, unions, and I'm not just going to beat up on unions because I think corporations, these mega too-big-to-fail corporations in Wall Street who helped cause the crash that we just went through are the ones that are controlling and getting all the money that's going on right now. And it's wrong. And I remember the war and the frustration and the anger and the we're gonna find the culprits and we're gonna prosecute, and you know, it was all great rhetoric for about a year. And then everybody's crawled right back in their hole, and here we are printing and handing trillions of dollars to the same people that took us down the last rabbit hole and caused the last crash, and nobody, almost nobody's being held accountable for that. And I remember the last crash before that. Yeah, and I remember the last crash before that, the savings and loan crash of the 80s. I mean, it's always the same story, and nothing gets done. Why? Because they control the politicians who pass these bills and bail these people out, and then they turn around and do it again. And 5 years later, 10 years later, we have another crash. The economy goes down. They print more money. You lose value. Well, I mean, you have the number. When was the last true wage increase? 70s?
1971. Real wages in America have been going down since 1971. That means as the numbers have increased, folks, more and more people making larger and larger numbers of income, the real spending power of that money has been in a decline for 99.99% of Americans for the last 42 years. At every boom and bust cycle that the Federal Reserve creates, because the boom-bust cycle is a Federal Reserve central bank manipulation, every time they do it, they say, well, we need more tools so that we can prevent this from happening again, and we can control inflation and keep employment up. That's what they always say, and they keep getting more and more power. Every time it happens, they wick more wealth away from you, they take away more liberty, they grow their power, and they grow their control. That's how this game works. And if you don't understand this, I mean, you have to know it, you know, as an economist, you have to know it enough to know how dangerous it is to you personally. The only ones that benefit are the ones connected to the bankers on Wall Street and the politicians in D.C. Everybody else is a victim of this. And you really, really have to understand it in that sense. You don't have to understand all the manipulations in the Federal Open Market operations and controlling interest rates and M1 and M2 and all that. You don't. I mean, I like that stuff. Chris likes that stuff. That's great if you do. If you don't get into it, but at least know how they rob you. And the person who has brought it to the most public attention in the last 40 years is the senator from Kentucky's father, the congressman, former congressman from Texas, who now has his own channel, the Ron Paul channel. I suggest you check it out. And he also does these Texas Straight Talks every Sunday. This is the one from December 16th, talking about the upcoming anniversary of the Fed. It's a little garbled because it is a phone call, but this is 4 minutes of Ron Paul explaining what's happened to us because of the Federal Reserve achieving its 100th birthday.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for Monday, December 16th. A week from now, the Federal Reserve System will celebrate the 100th anniversary of its founding. Resulting from secret negotiations between bankers and politicians at Jekyll Island, the Fed's creation established a banking cartel and a board of government overseers that has grown ever stronger through the years. One would think this anniversary would elicit some sort of public recognition of the Fed's growth from a quasi-agent of the Treasury Department intended to provide an elastic currency to a de facto independent institution that has taken complete control of the economy through its central monetary planning. But just like the Fed's creation, its 100th anniversary may come and go with only a few passing mentions. Like many other horrible and unconstitutional pieces of legislation, the bill which created the Fed, the Federal Reserve Act, was passed under great pressure on December 23, 1913, in the waning moments before Congress recessed for Christmas, with many members already absent from those final votes. This underhanded method of pressuring Congress with such a deadline to pass the Federal Reserve Act would provide a foreshadowing of the Fed's insidious effects on the U.S. economy, with actions performed without transparency. Ostensibly formed with the goal of preventing financial crises such as the Panic of 1907, the Fed has become increasingly powerful over the years. Rather than preventing financial crises, however, the Fed has constantly caused new ones. Barely a few years after its inception, the Fed's inflationary monetary policy to help fund World War I led to the Depression of 1920. After the economy bounced back from that episode, a further injection of easy money and credit by the Fed led to the Roaring Twenties and to the Great Depression, the worst economic crisis in American history. But even though the Fed continued to make the same mistakes over and over again, no one in Washington ever questioned the wisdom of having a central bank. Instead, after each episode, the Fed was given more and more power over the economy. Even though the Fed has brought about the stagflation of the 1970s, Congress decided to formally ask the Federal Reserve in 1978, with maintaining full employment and stable prices combined with constantly adding horrendously harmful new regulations. Talk about putting the inmates in charge of the asylum. Now we are reaping the noxious effects of a century of loose monetary policy as our economy remains mired in mediocrity and utterly dependent on a stream of easy money from the central bank. A century ago, politicians failed to understand that the financial panics of the 19th century were caused by collusion between government and the banking sector. The government's growing monopoly on money creation, high barriers to entry into banking to protect politically favored incumbents, and favored treatment for government debt combined to create a rickety, panic-prone banking system. Had legislatures known then what we know now, we could hope that they never would have established the Federal Reserve System. Today, however, we do know better. We know that the Federal Reserve continues to strengthen the collusion between banks and politicians. We know that the Fed's inflationary monetary policy continues to reap profits for Wall Street while impoverishing Main Street. And we know that the current monetary regime is teetering on a precipice. 100 years is long enough. End the Fed. Thanks for calling this update. A new update is placed on this number, 888-322-1414 every Sunday. The written text can be found on my free foundation website at www.the-free-foundation.org and on my Facebook page. Thanks for calling.
Like Ron Paul, don't like Ron Paul, I really don't care. The man has been a champion and a hero for exposing the manipulations of the Federal Reserve for four decades. Listen to him, because this bank, this cabal, this cartel of transnational private interests is not federal. It has no reserves. It is a scheme. It is designed to rob you, to plunder you, to control your government. And the crazy thing is that, you know, people think that if you're a Tea Party or a Ron Paul Liberty Movement person, then, you know, you're an anarchist. We're standing to defend the Constitution, which created the federal government. Anarchists don't want a state at all. What we want is a limited government. What we want is the government to protect our individual rights and to protect the market from undue interference. Instead, what we have is a system of corporatism, fascism, the collusion between a small few private financial interests and government power. That's the most dangerous combination on the face of the planet. And Ron Paul exposes it. You need to understand it and realize that his son has picked up his mantle with support from people like Paul Braun, Trey Gowdy, Louis Gohmert, Justin Amash, Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, to audit the Fed, expose it, show America how bad it is, and kill this bank, which has been wreaking havoc on our country for a century. Chris?
Amen. I just, you know, we've this one pretty hard, and I think it's important. I just think, I don't know if I have a lot more to add to it except for the fact that this is a really important issue. I don't know how many times I got to say that for people to understand this is an important issue. And if we don't get this right, I cannot fathom, you know, like Peter Schiff. I mean, he is somebody I follow, and he's pretty brilliant. But he says, you know, the correction's coming. The question is how big of a correction does it have to be? The longer these guys print and borrow money and refuse to reform government, the bigger the correction's going to be. And I'm being really careful how I say that, because, I mean, anybody who's ever suffered through a recession or a depression or whatever you want, hiccup in the market, lost money, gone through that uncertainty and that fear, that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a massive correction. And we really have not corrected the last two recessions, the dot-bomb era or the housing bubble burst, because the Fed's gone in there, printed, and the federal government's borrowed money. And so it never had a chance to – yeah, it never had a chance to correct. So the longer you put it off, the bigger the correction has to be. And that's the question, you know, is how big is it going to be? How painful is it going to be? America can survive anything because we're productive, creative people. But the longer you put people on unemployment, disability, food stamps, you know, programs not to work, the more difficult it is to correct, you know, because, and Newt talked about this, if people are long-term unemployment, they should be in educational programs to keep, you know, to move them and prepare them for different employment or upgrade their skills. Because if you're sitting on your butt doing nothing, you're not prepared to rock and roll when the economy turns around. There's so many dynamic factors to what makes an economy healthy, how you respond in a market after it goes through a flux or a correction. And we've been sitting on our butts for 5 years in this country. You know, to get up and hit the market and be prepared to be productive, you know, self-disciplined, back in the competitiveness of working. There are a lot of people, they ain't seen that in a long time. They haven't had that feeling in a long time. And the rest of the world is hungry because they haven't had our prosperity and the laziness that America has fallen into. And there's a lot of people out there that are ready, you know, to recover and to move on. And I wonder, and plus, how many factories since the 90s and major manufacturers are no longer in this country, Rex?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no, it's huge, huge.
It's almost
numbers.
Completely decimated. And so what they've done because of the reduction in our manufacturing base, not that output hasn't increased in the sense that you've got more efficiencies, but less people are involved in that sector, and we manufacture less of the world's manufacturing than we used to. But it's because of this paper, digital, fake monopoly money that we've been playing with for 100 years, that we've been getting ripped off by for 100 years. You know, what used to be a five and dime is now a $1 to $5 store. And where you used to buy good American products from the five and dime, now you buy cheap Chinese crap. They have created the bubble of all bubbles. This currency bubble is the worst thing ever. It's global. And when this thing bursts, it is going to be a fracking disaster. But you better get ready, and you better support those that are fighting for it. Learn why the Fed needs to be ended. Support Rand Paul's Audit the Fed bill. And we're getting ready to close out, but I'm going to play you 3.5 minutes of Senator Ted Cruz on the floor of the Senate for the first time in his career this March, supporting his friend, Senator Rand Paul, during his 13-hour filibuster. And then Chris and I are going to bring it on home.
That path, the path of standing and fighting for freedom, even when it seems daunting, even when it seems the gestalt of the moment is on the other side, is a path with many honorable forebears. And I can tell you, speaking and echoing the sentiment of the millions on Twitter, of the people following this stand for principle tonight, that if the 100 senators of this body stand together and say, regardless of party, liberty will always prevail. Regardless of party, the Constitution is the governing body, the governing document in this nation. Then we will be doing our jobs. And I commend you, Senator Paul, for a lonely stand that, as the night has worn on, has not proven quite so lonely. And indeed, were you the only senator standing at his desk this evening, It would not be lonely in that circumstance either, because you would be standing shoulder to shoulder with millions of Americans that do not wish the federal government to assert arbitrary power over our lives, over our liberty, over our property, but who instead want a government that remains a limited government of enumerated powers that protects the God-given rights each of us is blessed to have. And the question I ask of you . What, in your judgment, is America without liberty? Who are we if we are not a free people?
Mr. President, I want to thank the gentleman from Texas for his remarks, and I think he's hit it exactly on the head, and the question is a very pertinent question. The question is really, where do we go from here? I see this as a struggle. I see that we're engaged in an epic struggle, but it's not a struggle between Republicans and Democrats. It's a struggle between the president and the Constitution. The question is, does the president have the power and the prerogative to have his way regardless of the Constitution? The question is, does the Attorney General get to say that he will adhere to the Fifth Amendment when he chooses to? Is there a choice for American citizens on American soil that they either get the Fifth Amendment protections or they don't get the Fifth Amendment protections? So this really is a struggle, not only between the president and the Constitution, but between the Senate and the Congress and the president to say whether or not the president gets to determine this policy or whether this is a policy that should come from Congress. I think we should be asking not just for the president to give his memos on drones. We should be giving him our memos on drones. We need to be dictating the law to the president and not acquiescing and giving the president this authority. This should be a battle between the executive and the legislative. It should involve Republicans and Democrats trying to restrain the president from saying that he has the ability to decide when you get Fifth Amendment protections and when you don't.
Senators Ted Cruz and Rand Paul, during the filibuster of 2013. This is what it's about. And for those of you who somehow think that everybody in government should be getting along and singing kumbaya and doing bipartisan crap across the aisle and feeling each other's toes and rubbing each other's shoulders and picking each other's noses, that's not the way the founding fathers designed it. They designed it to be a battle, to be contentious, to be a ballast of one power against the other within the legislature, within each chamber of the legislature, and between the legislature and the executive. For those who love to talk about their bipartisan credits and reaching across the aisle like Jihad Jane McComed and Lindsey Grahamnesty and all those other losers, that's why we're in the mess we are in. You need people who are going to fight, people like Ted and Rand. Stand with them. Keep cruising. Support them. We're going to bring it on home to you, Chris.
Well, good show. If I say so myself, I'm not trying to be egotistical, but important topics. I do, of the last year, of all the crap that went on, all things that happened, Ted and Rand stood out, and they stood out strong, and it was awesome, and they got attacked hard. And I find it very interesting because, you know, like you and I are very similar, we are not people followers and hero worshipers. But we do need heroes in this country, and it's an important part of our culture. People need to see people stand up, whether it's Phil, Ted, Rand, Amash, whatever the case may be. But really, what we need heroes for is to show us that, you know, standing up for what you believe and doing the right thing is what all of us need to do. And you can be a hero in your own right, in your own little, you know, circle or sphere of influence in your world, and say, hey, I want to sit down and have a serious conversation with you, brother, sister, wife, husband, friend, coworker, and have these conversations, get your information right, sit down and have the conversation, and start influencing people to make good decisions again, and most importantly, to act, to get up. You know, whether it be, I know money's tight, but, you know, donating. You got to remember all these corporatists, fascists, big government, including supposed to be a business organization that's spending $50 million to defeat candidates?
The Chamber of Commerce or
supposed to be a free enterprise oriented group. I'll never support them again. I'll never be a member of them again as a business, period. In the report, it's over. And you know, that's something that we had a discussion about, you and I, sometime this week. Who knows what day it was. But, you know, the biggest majority of people in this country are God-fearing, you know, religious people, you know, who believe in America, believe in the Constitution. That is the largest percentage of people. But somehow, some way, we've been cowered. And I know I say we, I feel like I could do more, but I do something, you know, I feel like I'm in the fight. But if every facet, and I said this to you today when we were talking, I vote with my money. I don't go to businesses that support politicians and things that I don't believe in. You know, your money is your vote. Every dollar that you spend is a vote. Economics is what rules this nation, and it rules politics. And so, you know, you have to, and I'm not saying you got to go out and boycott this or boycott that or whatever. You know, that's definitely a tool of the left. But at the same time, if more, you know, the 100 million conservative Christians in this nation got a little more savvy with their time and their money, a lot would change. And if anything, that's what Phil Robinson's situation proved. Money talks. And when people stand up and say, I will not support you or I will support you based on how you treat somebody for their personal or religious beliefs, you know, when you look at these types of dynamics, it works. And so as an individual, you know, just the little things that you can do, you know, be the hero. You know, make better decisions with your money. Get out of debt. Quit being a consumer. You know, cut up those damn credit cards and get rid of them. And simplify your life so that you're not so impacted by these economic ups and downs. Because I guarantee you we're going to be in a roller coaster for the next few years until we get some sound politicians that make sound policies for this country. It's going to be up and down. So get out of debt. Quit spending money. Get smart. And support businesses and people who believe in the things that you believe in. And if you do that and more people do that, we'll turn this country around in a couple of years. I really believe that. I've always believed that. Problem is not enough people do it.
Yep, I agree.
I'm done.
All right. Well, folks, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Keep sharing the shows. When you see them out there on Facebook, Twitter, wherever, let people know about them. Share the MP3s. You can download them from our page. All our shows are available on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to Liberty's Thunder. Scroll down the page. They're all there. Like our Facebook page, Liberty's Thunder on Facebook. Join Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom. Do something every day to advance the conservative cause for liberty. And I'm going to close with a little bit of Reagan and a little bit more Rand and Ted, but I just want you to think about a couple of things. Here we are in the midst of the Christmas season, and yes, it is a season. It lasts at least 12 days, so at least until the 6th of January. Think about Christmas. It is very important because Christmas is the season of hope, and that is what you have to hold on to. And hope is not wishful thinking. Hope is a firm confidence that if you work your ass off, and you do your best to follow the good, the true, and the beautiful, and seek a free and virtuous society, it'll happen. And whether it happens for you or for your children or your children's children is not the point. The point is that you are only responsible for what you do to make it happen. And in this season of joy and hope, as we approach New Year's Day this week, 2014 begins. And 2013 is behind us, and so is this century of Federal Reserve corruption, corporatism, and the destruction of the old republic. But look forward to 2014. You've got to know where you're coming from. Don't put on rose-colored spectacles. You have to face reality as it is, and right now reality, for the most part, sucks. But be happy that you're here in this fight. Stand up, do your part, work harder, get others involved, stand with Rand. Keep on cruising. Support those who defend the Constitution, who defend your liberty, your sovereignty, your right to be who God made you to be. Don't let up, because 2014 is going to be a pivotal year. It is the year that we can strike a blow against the oligarchs, the status, and the Federal Reserve for the cause of liberty. Don't let labels frighten you. Don't let the attacks that are coming at us frighten you. Let them make you stronger, because if you're not in the fight, then you're either part of the problem or you are just a victim. But if you're in the fight, no matter what happens, you can be proud of the fact that you heroically stood up and you stood with those who are fighting, and we locked arms and we formed a phalanx and we rolled back the tide. And one day they'll look back on 2014. They'll look back on what we did, and they will say, those were the Americans who stood up. Those were the Americans who saved the Republic. Those are the Americans who handed us our freedom, which was handed to them by the Founding Fathers and the generations after them. That is pretty powerful stuff. So Merry Christmas and Happy New Year from Liberty's Thunder. The fight has just begun, and we appreciate you fighting with us. This is Rex and Trog signing off.
And the thunder of liberty rumbles on.
I am a convert to republicanism. I spent most of my adult life as a Democrat, and I can testify that when I found I could no longer follow the leadership of the Democratic Party, I became a Republican not because the parties were the same, but precisely because they were different. More than half of those who didn't vote have been polled and say it no longer makes any difference which party wins. Now some have taken another course. There are some among us, and I respect their views, who suggest that that means an end to the Republican Party, that we should form a new third party. May I suggest an alternative to that? Let's have a new first party, a Republican Party raising a banner of bold colors, no pale pastels, a banner instantly recognizable as standing for certain values which will not be compromised. Yes, we must broaden our base, but let's broaden it the way we did in 1972, because those Americans, Democrats and Independents and Republicans, are still out there looking for a banner around which to rally. And we have what they want, what they're seeking, but they don't know that. And sometimes I wonder if we know it. Young people, your own companions, I'm told, are registering either Democrat or Independent, avoiding us in overwhelming numbers. Well, is this because of what we represent or what they think we represent? I know that in a poll of 35,000 college and university students, 80% of them said they wanted more individual freedom, less interference by government in their private lives. Well, isn't that what we want? Our banner should also proclaim our faith in the marketplace as the greatest provider for our people, and that we will eliminate needless regulations and restrictions that keep the marketplace from being able to provide the jobs our people need. And on that subject, let us also proclaim compassion for those who, through no fault of their own, cannot provide for themselves, see that their needs are fully met. But at the same time, let us say that all those who are able-bodied will be given an opportunity to work for their welfare grants. We will not make them lifetime recipients of a dole as clients of an ever-growing welfare bureaucracy. We must extend our compassion to that great group of unsung heroes, the working men and women of this country, who ask nothing of government but to be left alone. They make the whole system work, but for a long time they haven't been fairly represented in government. Today they see themselves falling further and further behind, unable to afford the good life they've earned and deserve. Political demagogues for the last four decades have been appealing to the worst in us, the cupidity and selfishness of human nature. They've been telling us that each one of us can have a bigger slice of pie, but we have to help them take it away from someone else who's getting too big a share. Well, I think it's time for us to tell those political demagogues we can all have a bigger slice of pie if government will get out of the way and let the free enterprise system bake a bigger pie. James Burnham has said that even the most skillful surgeon, when operating on a Democratic politician, cannot separate demagogic from solid tissue without causing the death of the patient. Can anyone say that the banner that I've presented so far does not represent what has been typical Republican philosophy, but does it not also represent what the people of this country in an overwhelming majority desire for themselves and the country today? Our party must stand for the traditional belief in a federation of sovereign states, of local autonomy, and individual freedom.
The establishment will grow more and more hysterical the more powerful Rand Paul and Ted Cruz become, and they will gain strength as it's obvious that they're among the few people willing to raise the right question. And I consistently have been on the side of having the courage that Rand Paul and Ted Cruz have, and I think it's sad to watch the establishment grow hysterical.
To try to break Strom Thurmond's record, but I've discovered that there are some limits to filibustering, and I'm going to have to go take care of one of those in a few minutes here. But I do appreciate the Senate's forbearance in this, and I hope that if there are some on the other side of the aisle who have been listening and feel that they may agree on some of these issues, that if they will use their ability to impact the president's decision, and one will say that the Senate should be trying to restrain the executive branch, Republican or Democrat, and two, will use your influence to try to tell the president to do what I think really is in his heart, and that is to say, absolutely, we're not going to be killing Americans not in a combat situation, that we will obey the Constitution, that the Fifth Amendment does apply to all Americans, and there aren't exceptions. Thank you very much for the forbearance, and I yield.
90 seconds or so. And I simply want to note to the American people who have so engaged that this debate's in your hands. Ultimately, all 100 senators, all 46 Republicans, all 54 Democrats work for you. The pleas from the American people, I tell you, in Texas are deafening. The frustration that the United States Senate doesn't listen to the people is deafening. So I would call on all 46 Republicans to unite, to stand together and to vote against cloture on the bill on Friday or Saturday, because otherwise, if we vote with the majority leader and with the Senate Democrats, we will be voting to allow the majority leader to fund Obamacare on a straight party line vote, a 51 vote, partisan vote. The American people will understand that. And voting to give that power to the majority leader, I would suggest, is not consistent with, I believe, the heartfelt commitment of all 46 members of this conference to oppose Obamacare. The only path, if we're going to oppose Obamacare, is to stand together and oppose cloture. And I would ask for my friends on the Democratic aisle to listen to
the hour of noon has arrived pursuant to the order of the Senate will be in order. The Senate, Senator Schultz.